There's a calm surrender to the rush of day. When the heat of a rolling wind can't be turned away, an enchanted moment, and it sees me through. It's enough for this restless warrior just to be with you. And can you feel the love tonight? Is where we are. It's enough for this wide-eyed wanderer that we got this far.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome back. This is Beth. I'm recording this program tonight because I can't be here. I am going to visit a sick friend at Children's Hospital, and I left very early this morning. I couldn't rush home to be on the radio because it's a 2-hour drive from my house and too quick of a turnaround time. Let's get right into this, okay? When we speak of matter and consciousness, then this is a place for Western science and Eastern philosophy to meet. I would like to speak more tonight about Eastern philosophy of consciousness as a memory back into our ascension path to enlightenment. It is time we expand human knowledge. Neurologists look at the human brain, looking at fluctuations of the human mind. How does memory function? Neurologists still do not have a concrete explanation. Meditation can cure certain illnesses. This is the science of mind. We make a bridge between science and faith or spiritual value. As we look at our emotions, we can see them as the enemy, our source of suffering. When emotions develop in our mind, they are immediately the destroyer of peace, of mind, and eventually they destroy our health. Emotions can be very negative, and killing, bullying, cheating all stem from the emotions affecting the mind. Emotions are the destroyer of our peace, of our fortune. Emotions are an inner enemy and always there. We can escape an external enemy, but we cannot escape our emotions. It invades our meditations. It is a real destroyer of our happiness. How do we deal with this? Most people cope with their inner enemy by indulging in alcohol and sex. It doesn't have to be sex with someone. It can just be porn. So the routine is to go to a mindless job, come home, have a beer or a glass of wine, watch porn, and be relaxed enough to think, Beth said I should meditate, so I'll try it now before sleep. Then one enters a silence, and the mind and emotions enter in with their constant chatter. Next morning, I'll get an email where the same person addicted to alcohol and sex for their source of relaxation will ask me why they must meditate because it's just too hard. You have been given a gift, a human body, a human brain, and a good human heart. Combine these things. Our human body is precious because through reasoning, we can change our emotions. Through intelligence, through a gain in knowledge. There are positive emotions to cultivate, such as compassion or altruism. When we cultivate these positive emotions, we change the world around us. Emotion with reasoning is very positive. That is how we change our inner world. There can be no permanent happiness when the inner enemy is allowed to thrive in constant suffering of loneliness, unfulfilled work, lack of abundance, lack of love, isolation from like-minded people, whining, lack of discipline, and no connection to source energy. Once you develop a keen desire to overcome this enemy, it is the true realization of the aspiration to receive freedom. Buddhists and Hindus call this realization and key practice renunciation. That is how simple it is. In order to develop this idea further, I'd like to share a presentation from Deepak Chopra. He's the founder of the Chopra Foundation and the New York Times bestselling author. He teamed up with Rudy Tanzi, who is the Joseph P. and Rose F. Kennedy Professor of Neurology at Harvard University. And they wrote a book together called Superbrain. So please enjoy this.
First of all, big hand to Brad for making this happen. And Chicago Ideas Week. And his partners. So I'm going to talk to you for precisely 10 minutes to give you the entire meaning of life. Okay? And then I'm going to invite my colleague, Professor Rudy Tanzi from Harvard, to show you how our brain adapts to how we give meaning to life. And because our brain is the instrument through which we create our reality. When I was a physician in training, and I'm still a physician, although some people call me a witch doctor, I used to ask my patients, why do you want to get better? It happened one day because one of my patients who had coronary artery disease says, I have to get better. So I said, why? He said, I have to go to work. I said, why do you have to go to work? He says, I have to send my children to school. I said, why do you have to send my children to school? They get a good education. I went on, and finally he said, shut up. All I want is to be happy. Okay, so then I started asking my patients the same question. I'd take them down the rabbit hole, and they'd all say the same thing. I want to be happy. And so it occurred to me that that's the meaning of life. that happiness is the ultimate goal of all other goals. You want to be successful because it'll make you happy, you think. You want to have a good relationship because in your mind, that's going to make you happy. You want to be healthy because it's going to be making you happy. You want higher consciousness, a connection with the source of the universe, happiness. So this set me off on a long journey, which began almost 35 years ago. And that is, what is happiness? And so before I continue any further, let me tell you that social scientists have already figured out what they call the happiness formula. So here you go. I'm going to give you the happiness formula. And this occurred after His Holiness the Dalai Lama a few years ago asked a bunch of us. He said, why don't you all talking about stress? Why don't you talk about happiness? So 2 years later, a bunch of us, including some really interesting social scientists, they went back and they said, Your Holiness, we have the happiness formula. And it is just like Einstein's formula, H is equal to S plus C plus V. H stands for happiness. S stands for set point in the brain, which is how do you look at the world? Do you see it as a problem or an opportunity? So that's the happy people, obviously, see opportunities, the unhappy see problems. C stands for conditions of living. Are you successful in the material world? Because that's a very important part. So if somebody says poor people are happier, don't believe them, please. Okay? Poor people are not happier. There are exceptions, of course. And that's about 10% of our happiness experience. The first part is about 50%. And the third part is choices that we make every day. And there are two kinds of choices we make. One is for personal pleasure, sex, entertainment. America, the number one personal choice for pleasure is shopping, believe it or not, and entertainment. And then there are other choices we make which are for fulfillment, where we find purpose, we contribute, we create meaning in our lives, and we live the questions, as Brad said. And they start very simple, and then they get huge, these questions. And it doesn't matter whether we know the answers or not. As Brad said, quoting Maria Rilke, if you live the questions, then one day, when you're ready, life will move you into the answers. And in this third part, which is about 40% of our happiness experience on a daily basis, the easiest way to be instantly happy, is to make somebody else happy. And you do that by giving them attention, listen to them, affection, care for them, and appreciation. Notice some strength that they have. So there you have the happiness formula. Okay, and this is well researched, by the way. I'm not making this up. But as we spoke to His Holiness and other people, we realized that human beings are peculiar. They can have all the things in life that they get, and they can still have existential unhappiness because they worry about not being happy in the future. Or they remember the past and they have some resentment and grievance. So one of our scientists said, you know, if you kick a dog, the dog also remembers. And you meet that dog 5 years later, the dog will remember, might attack you. But unlike a human being, the dog won't plan for 5 years how to get even. So that's a very fundamental difference between us and other living organisms. But we also worry about the future. We worry about old age. It's the story of the Buddha. He saw as a youngster people getting old, people getting infirm, people going through decrepitude, both physical and mental, and ultimately people dying. And he asked, is that going to happen to me? And his friend, who was a stable boy, he said, yeah, it's going to happen to you too. It happens to everyone. And so it set the Buddha off to what in the East we call the path to enlightenment. And this path evolves slowly as life evolves. So as life evolves, our brains also evolve. We have three parts to our brain: the reptilian brain, the emotional brain, the cortical brain. And when Rudy comes on, we'll talk a little bit more about it. But, you know, essentially the meaning of life also evolves. So in the very early stages of our life, our goal is just survival, safety. When I was in medical school, the way we remembered the functions of this part of the brain, the reptilian brain, was the four Fs: feeding, fighting, fleeing, and reproduction. Okay? So that's the first level of meaning. The second level of meaning is success. You know, it's such a big thing in our culture. Hard work, exacting plans, driving ambition, goal-driven. And when we finally get it, then most people have rotten teeth, high blood pressure, and cardiovascular problems, inflammation everywhere, and bad tempers. But anyway, that's a goal. Okay, that's part of the meaning of life. And then from there we evolve into love, belongingness, and from there we move into self-esteem, real self-esteem, which means not self-image, but that part of ourself which is independent of both criticism and flattery, that part of ourself which is hiding behind the ego, that part of ourself that is creative, that part of ourself that has imagination, that part of ourself which is fearless. And then the journey really begins after that, because it's not till we have reached these earlier stages that we begin to ask the most important questions of our existence, which is, why is there a universe? Why is there something instead of nothing? Why is there awareness that there's a universe? Because if there was a universe and we weren't aware of it, then there is no universe. We are aware that is the universe. What is the nature of this awareness? Where does it come from? Do we have a soul? What is the meaning of death? Does God exist? And if God exists, does he or she care about us? We are, after all, a speck of dust in a minor galaxy somewhere in the junkyard of infinity. It's a big universe, 13.8 billion years in the making. It's a huge universe stretching 47 billion light years across infinite number, literally hundreds of billions of stars and galaxies, way across the cosmic horizon where dark energy is making the galaxies tumble faster than the speed of light into the unknowable. Where do we fit in? Where do we fit in? And today we know that every atom in your body, every atom in your body goes back to the Big Bang. The hydrogen and helium in your body was created in a few seconds after the Big Bang. Every atom in your body, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, was manufactured in the crucible of stars. We are luminous stardust beings, the coming together of space, time, energy, information, and matter that has become self-aware. We are literally the eyes of the universe looking at itself. And if we begin to recognize this and live these questions, then we are the evolutionary impulse of the universe to its next stage of evolution. Today, people talk about global warming, radical poverty, violence, all this chaos. I'd just like to say to you that this is the moment of opportunity. This is the moment of choice. Just when the caterpillar thought the world was coming to an end, it turned into a butterfly. And that's where we are right now. And the choice is ours. Ask yourself, what do I want to contribute to the world? And when do I start?
That's the key, everybody. At the moment of the Big Bang, you were created as stardust, as the universe looking at itself in a physical body. That's how it was when we fell into matter. And now we're going back to remembering our connection to the universe. So let me share with you a little music break, just for a minute. I use this music to train my mind, to discipline my mind. We can fake it till we make it, and I do that all the time. This is a tool I use. I've trained my mind like a Pavlovian dog. When it hears this music, my mind is commanded to be happy, no matter what bad news I've just heard. And it really works for me. You can find tricks of the mind that you can use on yourself, and they'll get you across those moments in life where you want to fall back on to the inner enemy, negative emotions. The less time you spend there, the faster your path on ascension will be. And I run at breakneck speed, and I can't afford to take any little indulgence breaks with negative emotions. Anytime I slip, I go immediately to this song. Enjoy this.
She's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy.
One of the things I noticed that has helped me is doing these readings that I do with Sananda. Folks call me and they talk to Sananda and they ask him their questions. So one of the questions that's asked often is, how do I activate my third eye? What can I do? What practice can I do to make it so that I can see images with my third eye? And Sananda always replies by saying, if you'll do guided meditations, and when the person suggests that you see something within the guided meditation, then do that. Project an image onto your screen. Imagine what you see. And if you do this over and over, eventually your third eye will activate and you'll be able to see without having any suggestions of what to see. That's how you turn on the machinery inside that makes it work. I'd like to do a few minute meditation with you. Make yourself comfortable on the floor or in a chair, keeping the spine and neck in alignment, arms relaxed by your side or in your lap. Then close your eyes gently. Now focus on your breathing. Remember that the breath and the mind are closely connected. By controlling the breath and making it very slow, you are calming the mind. This calm is essential to good health. Now relax each limb of your body. Start by giving the toes a gentle shake, then relax them. Relax the ankles and the lower legs, the knees, the thighs, the hips. Wherever there is a joint, concentrate on relaxing there. The upper and lower limbs will automatically relax. In the same manner, release all tension and tightness in your spine and back. Relax your navel area and feel the entire abdomen relax. Relax your chest so heart and lungs will benefit. Then the shoulders, relaxing the arms. Continue with the forehead to relax face and scalp. The entire body is now completely relaxed. Breathe slowly and evenly and quiet the mind. Know that all is well. You are safe and secure. All your needs are taken care of. Now visualize yourself lying on a beach. Make it the most beautiful beach you have ever seen. Notice the color of the sand and the clarity of the water. Slowly walk down to the water. Go in to where you feel comfortable. Then lie down and float on the water. Allow the water to support you entirely. Allow the motion of the water to lull you and comfort you. Relax completely into the water, knowing at all times that you are completely safe. Now allow yourself to go under the water. Imagine yourself swimming effortlessly, as though the water were your home. You can breathe easily, as though you were on dry land. Swim around and explore all the pretty rocks and plants you see. Look at the many fish swimming past you. You are at home here. You feel safe and secure. Now float to the top and let yourself rest on the surface again. Feel the rhythmic movement of the waves carry you and become one with your breathing. Let your awareness expand and blend with the waves until you become one with the waves. Observe the spray that flies into the air, then mistily filters down again to join the wave. Watch how free it is and how easily it gives of itself, knowing that no harm will come to it, knowing that it will return and once more become the wave. Visualize yourself being as free and unconcerned as the ocean spray. Trust the universe to take total care of you. The sun is overhead, shining warmly. All about you are the reflections of the sunlight on water, like tiny suns, unique lights unto themselves that dance and move with the motion of the water. Allow your body to disperse itself further over the ocean surface. Stretch out and let the lights that are dancing over the surface dance over you as your body and the ocean surface blend and merge. Feel that you have become millions of tiny sparkling lights. Slowly, gently, begin to pull your body back together, leaving behind any distress, soreness, or disease. Very gently, your body takes form again, floating once more on the surface of the ocean. Now you may glide gently back to the beach again. Feel the sand beneath you and let it run through your fingers. Stretch out in the sunlight and absorb the light of the life-giving sun. Then slowly let the scene fade from your mind. Become aware of your breathing and of your body in this room. Slowly begin to move your hands and feet. Stretch your arms above your head and give your whole body a good stretch. Relax. And when you are ready, open your eyes and see how you feel. I have an offering coming up this weekend, everybody. on Sunday, and I'd like to invite you to that. And this is going to be a live event. I have a live stream on my website with a chat, interactive chat. So what I'll do is, this is a 2-hour class regarding ascension, or it will be a dialogue, more like a talk between all of us. And I'll give a presentation in the beginning, which will be about 15 minutes. And the balance of the time, an hour and 45 minutes, I invite you to put into chat your questions about ascension, or about overcoming the mind, or any questions really that you have about anything. And then I will answer the questions live, and it will be an interactive learning time. So I invite you to register for this. It is on my website, cosmicascensionguide.org. cosmicascensionguide.org. And look under future events and you'll see more information there. I hope to see you on Sunday, February 23rd. This will happen at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. The alternate times are 9 to 11 a.m. Central Time, 8 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time, 7 to 9 Pacific Time, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, and 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. for Central Europe. So please join me then. You can ask me any question you like. Earlier this month, there was an important award that Stephen Bassett won, and he is the executive director of Paradigm Research Group. He is the one who produced the citizens' hearings on disclosure. And so I want to share what he has to say about disclosure and how it will happen. It kind of matches up with everything I've been saying. And I'm really proud of Steve. He has been doing this for 18 years, and he's an amazing individual. His work is untouchable. So I want to share this great moment with you. And the narrator that you're going to hear is George Norrie from the radio. So let's take a listen, everybody.
Stayed really close friends. I remember while I was doing my show in St. Louis, one of Art Bell's many retirement moments occurred. And the first person I called was the recipient of this Lifetime Achievement Award. And I said, "Steve, you're not going to believe it. I just heard that Art retired. Can you help me get that job?" He was so upset, he hung up. I was paralyzed. But he still continues to be dedicated to trying to unravel the mystery of disclosure. He heads up the Paradigm Research Group. He is very heavy into exopolitics. He just put together a very special hearing in Washington, D.C., which was just unbelievable. We'll talk about that. It is my pleasure to award the Conscious Life Lifetime Achievement Award to none other than Mr. Stephen Bassett.
I'll do my best. I think I'll move around. The truth is that when I learned that the job was opening at Coast to Coast. And I think George knows this, and he may not. I actually sent a letter to Kitchen, Mr. Kitchen, who was the president, and said that this was the man for the job. Now, first, with respect to this, I think some of you can relate to what I'm about to say. Not too long ago, I came of a certain age when I was eligible for discount senior movie tickets. And I absolutely would not buy them. Because, as far as I was concerned, the moment I bought a senior discount movie ticket, I was officially old. Does anybody relate to this? I can't be the only person. Right? Okay. Well, what can I say? I guess I can start buying those tickets now. Because this is basically a certificate that says you're officially old. Now, it is particularly significant to me that this award is being given to me by George Norrie. Why? In 1996, Art Bell, the founder of Coast to Coast AM, who's still with us, back in Toronto, bless his heart, made a very significant decision. But Art Bell hated politics. Who can blame him? Right? I mean, he hated it in 1996. What he thinks of it now, I can't imagine. But even though he didn't want that on the show, in fact, he switched to a new format to partially get away from it, he made a place for people in the ET issue field who were addressing the political issues to come on. And he let me on, and he let my colleagues on. And for the first time since the issue really got underway, the advocacy movement had a core audience of several million people to tell and discuss the political aspect of ending this truth embargo and all that's accompanied to it. And that is absolutely essential to advocacy. Millions of people hearing this information, and it wasn't some 90-second clip like you get on a CNN interview or something. 2-3 hours. I did several 4-hour shows with Art Bell. That's a long time. And so that was absolutely essential to the development of the exopolitical disclosure movement from the mid-90s forward. Now, when Art retires, George Norrie takes over, and guess what? George continued that policy without question. In fact, I know I've done more shows with George than I did with Art. Permitting that platform where we could go on, myself and many colleagues, and not just talk about something they've seen in the sky, but talk about the process underway that will ultimately lead to you being told that you're not alone in the universe. And so I guarantee you that history is going to recognize the role of Coast to Coast AM in due course. Now, going forward, I have to say that I'm a little ambivalent about this award for two reasons. One, I have a lot of colleagues. The drinking crowd is in the back, and they're partying, folks. I've been in this 18 years as of January 26th of this year. Now, I have colleagues who have been pursuing this issue for 25, 35, 45 years. Linda Moulton Howe, for example, who will be on the panel tomorrow at noon. The disclosure panel will be there. I'm giving a workshop at 6. Drop by. You know, 18 years is a little thin, right? And so I'm thinking about them as I get this. The other thing is that a lot of people in this movement did not make it to the prize. This is true of every advocacy movement in history. I can assure you, the women's suffrage movement began in 1840. The civil rights movement began really in the late 1900s. They did not get to see the prize. In the last 12 months, we've lost 4 more people. We lost Philip Coppens, a key researcher on ancient aliens, 41 years old. We lost Lloyd Pye, a very young 66. Then we lost James Allen, who was working on a documentary, well along in the documentary about the testimony of Mark McCandlish on alien reproduction vehicles. Gone in 2 weeks. And then just 2 weeks ago, we lost Elaine Douglas. Now, Elaine, interestingly enough, was one of the original members of the Operation Right to Know. Operation Right to Know was the first organization that I'm aware of that actually held a protest march on this issue in front of the White House in, I think, July of 1993. Just 4 months after Rockefeller approached the Clinton administration with his desire to see Clinton release all the UFO files and possibly create an amnesty program for witnesses. Of course, he didn't even know that at the time. And they marched in front of the White House at a time when, let's just say, the media wasn't quite ready to embrace that. Even their colleagues were not particularly ready to embrace that. It's, don't do that, what are you doing? There hasn't been a march since. It's probably not the way to go, right? And then Elaine went on to do 20-some years in MUFON. She found the JAR, the Journal for Abduction Research, and made a tremendous contribution, and she is gone. And there are others, Matt, Bud Hopkins. I have a feeling that there are people in the political operatives in Washington, there are people in the military intelligence, there are people in the agency intelligence. And their view is that whatever misbehavior they were either directly involved in or know about, if they just keep their mouth shut and say nothing, and if they do say anything, lie to the American people, then the issue that they don't want to deal with will outlast you, and all of their adversaries will simply die off. Well, that's not going to happen. The second reason for my ambivalence about this award is I kind of feel a little bit like President Obama when he got that a peace award when peace hadn't arrived yet. You know what I'm talking about? As you know, I have been making clear that disclosure is just around the corner for about the last 12 years. It turns out it's a very long block. But the fact is that the goal of this movement, the advocacy movement, is very clear. It is disclosure. And disclosure is very simple. It is the formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence, non-human intelligence, engaging the human race by the world's governments. That is the goal. That is the prize. And until that prize is won, I haven't actually achieved the goal. All right? So, I can say this to you, that in the not-too-distant future, and I'll be talking about why that is at my workshop tomorrow at 6 p.m., The President of the United States, when the President walks up to the podium out of that hallway in the East Room and looks into the camera and tells you, finally, that you're not alone in this universe and that this planet is being engaged, I assure you that this award will be very close by as I watch that, and I will look at it, and I'll be reminded of all the people that helped along the way. Thank you.
So there you have it from the horse's mouth. President Obama will come up to the podium and he will share with all of us that we have been engaged with extraterrestrial life. And that is the definition of disclosure. We're very close. Now, to finish off our evening, what I'd like to do is share with you an excerpt from my book called Lord Ashtar and the Galactic Federation. There was a lady, Ethel P. Hill, who was an early UFO contactee in 1955. She is historically one of the best channels of Ashtar who has ever lived in the last 100 years. And so I have some commentary that I wrote and what she channeled in answer to our questions that we are grappling with every day. So let's take a look at this. Often we wonder why our galactic family doesn't come back and help us out with these terrible plights on Earth, and we think of their advanced lives and the drudgery we face, and we wonder why we wait, although we have unwavering devotion to our harsh mortal lives. About this, Ashtar says, and this is from Ethel P. Hill's channelings. Wearily have the days dragged by, while plots and counterplots complicated and multiplied man's unsolvable problems. We have watched with a horror impossible to repress man's ineffectual attempts to extricate himself from the treacherous quicksands of deceptive agreements accepted in apparent good faith, only to be ruthlessly trampled underfoot when their evil purpose has been achieved. And this is me again, everybody. There are many situations this describes: colonization, land grabs, bank collapses, book burnings, treaties, false prophets, and on. One of the horrors for the spacemen is that they cannot help us if we do not help ourselves. When we incarnated, we agreed to do anything necessary, endure unending hardships, and remain loving throughout, no matter how long it took. We are not the ones who have been waiting for the spacemen to come. It is the spacemen who have been waiting for us to wake up from our sleep, sharpen our senses, and make bold moves to change the imbalances on Earth for the sake of ourselves, our planet, and the cosmos itself. And Ashtar says this: why do we say the tide has now turned? Because all mankind, enslaved or still capable of recovering their lost heritage of freedom, begin to see for themselves the enormity of their folly in transgressing laws, all consequent possession of all they must earnestly need and desire. And this is me. The portion of mankind that are still enslaved are the dark ones. They had altered their own DNA to achieve their goals, and the result is they are unable to love. This is the reason they are able to relish in committing atrocities. They are to be pitied and loved. Indeed, our Creator forgives all that they have done, as they too are divine sparks of God. As they use their free will to inhabit their cellular ability to hold light and hold love for greedy ends, they have also forgotten. They must forgive their crimes. God has already forgiven. This is what keeps them enslaved, the fact that they forgot to love themselves. At any moment in our time, they can reach out to Mother, Father, God, and declare they have forgiven themselves, and promise to commit their lives anew to love, and they will be given all the assistance available in our world to come into new earth. All of these ones are capable of reclaiming their heritage of freedom, but many are crippled to do so due to their own self-imposed prison of hate. When the dark ones violated creative universal law by altering their DNA to promote their own agenda, finally have been able to see what a grandiose mistake this was. In their discovery and understanding, they have become afraid. No one wants to suffer second death. Second death is when a soul is uncreated. All that makes up the soul on every level, in every existence, is returned back to light, and it is as if the soul never existed. This will happen to many souls who have violated universal law to the extent of mass genocide and worse. The only way to receive this sentence is to stand trial on the World Court of the International Criminal Court, and if found guilty, to go to the highest court in our solar system, the Solar Tribunal on Saturn. If found guilty in both places, then the counselors make a sentence, and then there is only one who makes the final decision regarding carrying out the decision of second death, and that is Mother Sekhmet of the Egyptian Golden Age. It is Sekhmet who is known in other cultures as Durga in India, who was the sole responsibility of the final decision. All that was born into our universe was born out of Mother Sekhmet. We are all her children, all children of the sun, and any one of her children who committed these atrocities will stand before her in the end. And this is from Ashtar. When will man cease his ridiculous attempts to obstruct the orderly processes of progressive development as set in motion at the commencement of his sojourn on planet Shaan. That's what he calls Earth. The answer is absurdly simple. When he acknowledges to himself that his puny brain and unruly impulses constitute no reliable guide to the acquisition of those tangible and intangible assets without which he cannot hope to escape a most terrifying fate. And also, Ashtar tells us that there is so much pollution in our environment back in 1955. Without the constant intervention of the Galactic Federation, we wouldn't have made it. So now I'm getting emails about black snow and more false flags and, you know, everybody's worried about the chemtrails, and I never give that even a second thought. I simply don't make them a part of my reality. And this is what Ashtar has to say about that. As of the time of this writing, January 1955, Earth's atmospheric envelope be impregnated with many deleterious elements inimical to the health and development of any human body, particularly one delicately attuned to high vibrational frequencies. Such an one must be constantly safeguarded against these infringing constituents of the very air they must breathe to sustain life. Not alone the air, but the seldom recognized subversive thought streams. Betimes well nigh flood the mental atmosphere and drown out the more sensitive, upward-reaching tendrils of hope and faith. To counteract these and other dangerous deterrents to man's wholesome life, both physical and spiritual, certain purifying processes be constantly employed by the invisible guardians of the planet. Else would ye perish. Ye have observed what ye call an electric storm, with its pyrotechnical display of lightning, and have noted the ensuing freshening of the atmosphere, making it a pleasure to draw in deep draughts of purified air. This be but one of the countless artifices contrived to lessen the dangers lurking in the ether about thee. Other threats to thy health of body and mind, for they be woven together like the woof and the warp of a fabric, be not so easily apprehended. So, you know, there he's describing the Pleiadian cloud crafts that come through and purify the air constantly. And he's saying that to purify our minds and our bodies isn't so easy. And that's what we've been talking about tonight. Thank you, everybody, for joining me tonight. I'm sorry I missed you. Next week when we come back, I want to focus on this DNA altering that's happened and how each one of us has animal DNA spliced into our cells and what it means and what new we have now to deal with that. So that's what I want to focus on next week. We'll continue to talk about consciousness as well. And I hope this week you will go out to theearthcollective.com and begin your own projects and share those with us next week. Please call in next week and tell us what you're working on. Remember, Deepak was telling us that the key to happiness was helping others. And that's so true, isn't it? So here I have a song to sing us off the air. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Namaste.
Because I'm happy, let alone if you know what happiness is. Happiness.